Joe Lenardi, ESPN's resident bracketologist, is with us. Joe, thanks so much for joining us on BU Beat.
No problem.
So you just got back from Indianapolis, where you were part of the two-day 20-man mock selection committee comprised of 20 writers and broadcasters from around the country, two for each actual committee member. The committee actually has 10, and you guys drafted the bracket as similar to Selection Sunday as possible. So, Joe, what was it like? Take us through the process.
The first thing that was done was to identify which actual committee members we would be modeling. We meaning the 20 members of the print media who went through the exercise on Wednesday, and then 20 members of the broadcast media who participated all day Thursday. I was in the latter group. There were folks from CBS and CSTV and ESPN and some local television affiliates in the Midwest, on-air people, off-air people, researchers, in most cases the brains of the outfit as opposed to the talent. Interestingly enough, my partner ended up being Clark Kellogg of CBS, and we were representing Mike Slive, who's the SEC commissioner, on the actual committee. So Clark and I were combining our thoughts into one of the 10 votes, as would be the case with the real committee. And, you know, things got off to a great start in that, you know, clearly they paired Clark and I by height. And anybody who knows, you know, Clark's about 6'10". And well, let's just say that I'm not.
And speaking of your partner, Clark, I saw where he commented that during the process, everyone seemed to have their favorite resume criteria. For him, it was road wins that weighed most heavily. What was and is your key element to a good tourney resume?
Well, interestingly enough, we were pretty simpatico on that particular criteria. And that led to a pretty lengthy discussion during the final at-large ballot. At one point, there was a vote for the last spot in the field, a potential last spot in the field involving Florida, who were about to start playing in our hypothetical SEC championship game. This was now the equivalent of Sunday afternoon in the selection weekend timeline. And St. Joseph's, which is doubly ironic because, of course, that's where I work, but that's not who I was representing in this meeting. We were actually representing Florida. And then to add another layer, the leading scorers of those two teams happened to be brothers, Nick and Pat Calathes. So there was all this, you know, intrigue going on. And before we had to leave the room as SEC partisans, Clark and I did. So the other nine would make that determination. They did flash the two team sheets on the screen, and Florida is 2-4 on the road at this point in time, and St. Joe's is 8-3. And we both, you know, though theoretically unable to speak, kind of said, you know, if you lose to all of your good road opponents by 15, 20, 25 points, and you don't get to play any home games in the tournament, what does that say about the quality of a team? As it turns out, St. Joe's won that particular ballot, but Florida went on and won our hypothetical SEC championship game to grab the spot anyway. So the entire exercise became academic, and it took about an hour and a half.
Joe, you hear so much about the importance of the RPI, and the experts like yourself typically lump wins into the top 50 RPI category and then the top 51 to 100 category, qualifying them as good wins. While I understand the simplicity of doing that, it can easily mitigate or assist the appearance of a team's resume. For instance, a win in the top 10 RPI is more significant, obviously, than a win against a team with an RPI of 49 or 50. Did the committee lump the teams into the top 50 and top 100 RPI categories, or did they break each quote-unquote good win down individually?
That's a great question. I did not witness any kind of conversation that was broken down that way. Certainly the team sheets break it down 1 to 50, 51 to 100, 101 to 200, and so on. There might have been verbal commentary that says, oh, you know, like when we were discussing Davidson as an at-large, Davidson having, in our exercise, been determined to have lost in their Southern Conference championship game, you know, folks will say, well, they didn't just play teams in the top 50. You know, they played Carolina, they played Duke, they went to UCLA, and for the most part were very competitive in all of those games, albeit losses for Davidson. But nobody said top 10, top 5, top 15, anything like that. And I think top 50 is probably the most common breakdown because generally that's the tournament field. Mm-hmm. Generally. And what you're saying is, how competitive has this team been throughout the course of the year against the quality of competition that it's most likely to run up against in the tournament, at least in the early rounds? You know, if you end up playing a top two, top five, top ten team, you've probably advanced a bit.
When you do your bracketology, it's just you, a one-man show. But here you were forced to be a part of a democracy. Along those lines, how much did the human element and the idea of groupthink affect the ultimate outcome of the mock bracket?
I'm going to answer both of those separately. I do think there's groupthink that goes on. I witnessed it this week. I thought the particular group that I was in, Brandon, was a little bit power conference heavy. And by that I mean, you know, a little too quick to maybe dismiss a team that might have a losing record in a really good conference. Granted, a team like that is playing better teams by and large than the so-called mid-majors or below, but they're also getting more opportunities to win against top competition too. And if they're going 7-9 or 8-10, for me, and being true to my principles, that's a big red flag. Not an absolute, but certainly something that needs to be looked at carefully. And we had a lot of votes where I didn't think that got enough conversation. Now, granted, we had compressed 4 or 5 days into one really, really long 12 or 14-hour day. But this particular group seemed to be a little bit more easily swayed by the power conference teams. It was easy for me to stick to my guns, probably maybe more so than others in the room, because I'm building brackets almost every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the thoughts that might have been very evolved for a lot of the others in the room, and I'm not minimizing their participation. They more represent the committee members.
Right.
You know, I'm not suggesting that it's necessarily personally healthy to be building brackets in one sleep, like a few of us are. But, you know, whereas I might be able to rattle a set of criteria off the top of my head about a given team because I just spent the last 9 nights looking at it, mm-hmm. Not everyone would have that kind of ready mental access to, let's say, Florida's last 4 road games and that they've lost them by an average of 19 points.
What did you find to be the hardest and the most surprising thing you encountered during the mock selection?
The hardest thing is probably just staying with it. And by that I mean, you know, if you do something, anything, you know, it could be painting, raking leaves, or watching sports on television. If you do anything for 12 or 14 straight hours, you know, you're just going to get a little mentally weary. You know, you take breaks and there's mealtime and all that, but, you know, it's a pretty one-dimensional set of topics that are being discussed, you know, for lengthy periods of time. And I was tired when it was over, and it was one long day for me, and it's 5 long days for the committee members, and I certainly have a new appreciation for that element of it. Surprises? This may sound a little bit self-serving, but I was surprised by just how close my spreadsheet models are to the ones that we actually used. And my team sheets and my nitty-gritty and my data and just the ability for, again, a committee of one, it's a lot easier to get consensus that way, as any of us, you know, would appreciate, particularly those who aren't married. But, you know, it's much easier to get consensus from a committee of one
right.
than a committee of 10 or 20.
Definitely.
But the systems and the safeguards, you know, that we've built into bracketology to make sure teams that can't play each other don't, or can't play in a certain region, or teams from certain conferences can't be slotted in given ways. Those safeguards are in place, and they're very similar to what, you know, I'm using on a daily basis.
Joe, NCAA President Miles Brand was quoted saying that he wants to make the selection process as transparent as possible for the rest of us, and this mock draft is a step in doing that. Along that train of thought, and I personally hope the answer to this next question is no, do you think they will ever televise the selection committee drafting the bracket?
I would hope not, actually. as much as I'd like to see it, it's hard enough now. And I suppose, you know, rights fees being what they are, the NCAA could be persuaded in some respect to go down that road. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some things, you're just better off not seeing how they make sausage.
Yep.
You know, you're better off just eating it at the end. I think this is one of those things. Now, I do think that it would be of great value to allow maybe an embargoed media member or several to observe the process and then recount it afterward, not during, afterward. And I think what we've been through is maybe a step in that direction.
Well, you are on BU Beat. I am a Butler grad, so naturally I have to ask, how did the committee view Butler's tournament resume?
Very positively, and even though history is not a factor, meaning recent tournament history, I think the fact that Butler has been a legitimate player on the national stage on and off here for several years meant that there wasn't a lot of debate needed for how legitimate their current achievements are. And Tom Brennan of ESPN was the mock committee member responsible for the Horizon League. He had just done the Butler-Valpo game earlier in the week and spoke glowingly about the Bulldogs, and that was one of the easier votes.
Some people look at Butler's losses at Wright State and at Cleveland State and consider them bad losses to much lesser opponents. Others view them as somewhat acceptable losses in hostile environments. How did you and the mock committee view such road losses in a league like the Horizon?
Personally, I'm in the latter category, that maybe acceptable isn't the right word, but understandable losses that in any league, you know, of 16 or 18 games where half of them are on the road. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, many years no one goes unbeaten in any league in any part of the country. And, you know, if you're talking, you know, one or two, to me that's like kind of a mulligan in golf, you know, a breakfast ball maybe,
yeah.
When you're on that first tee at 6 in the morning. There would have to be more than that for me to have an impact where I would see the team, or if they were right on the cut line, whether or not I would select them, unless the team, the head-to-head team they're being compared against, didn't have any of those losses.
Butler hosting Drake is the featured bracket buster game in 2 weeks. Drake just has one loss, Butler two, but many experts are saying that Drake hasn't really had a token good win. How important is this game for both teams? For seeding implications, is this game more important for Drake than Butler?
I don't think it should be, but from what I observed on Thursday, it might be. At least in our group, Drake did not get a lot of high seed consideration. I think they ended up on our board as a 6, which I thought was way too low, given the fact basically that, you know, they've only lost one game.
Yeah.
And they're dominating the Missouri Valley Conference, which, while not a multiple bid 3-4-5 NCAA candidate league this year, like, I don't think the Missouri Valley has suddenly become, you know, a bottom five league. Mm-hmm. So for Drake to be 12-0 and to have won all their road games in the league, I think they deserve a little better of a seed than that, and I voted them that way on Thursday. But if that is the perception of Drake by enough of the other committee members, they're going to need a good showing in that game at Butler next week, or in 2 weeks.
Joe, I know this is a tough and very loaded question, but I want to get your opinion. Butler and their in-state rival IU, what's the best seeding scenario for each of them, assuming a very strong finish in the regular season and a conference tourney title for each?
Probably a tougher hypothetical in Indiana's case because of the quality of competition, but
sure.
I'm of the opinion that any Big Ten team among the top group, if they're to win, let's say, the regular season and conference tournament, which Indiana could still do, same for Wisconsin and Purdue and Michigan State, to me, that's a 2-seed. And so I would put a 2 as the best-case scenario for the Hoosiers. Butler, you know, beating Drake, running the table, maybe gets him to I think ultimately they're going to be in the 4-5 range.
And finally, Joe, David Scott, who was part of the committee as well, wrote a follow-up piece on the two-day event and highlighted that you guys also ate exactly what the committee eats. Going down his list here, cherry cobbler, an ice cream sundae, a healthy dose of potato chips, several iced coffees, etc. Not exactly a picture of health the committee is.
Well, what's interesting is we learned that their last meal out of the hotel, out of their deliberation room, occurs Wednesday night of selection week. Everything else is brought in so they can keep working. They go out Wednesday night and they carb up at a local Italian joint. And, you know, we're told that stretch slacks are the key attire. I personally had one serving of the cherry cobbler for lunch and just one scoop of ice cream at about, 11:30, midnight, when, you know, you need that little extra boost to get those last teams bracketed.
ESPN's resident bracketologist, expert Joe Lenardi. Joe, thanks so much for joining us. Greatly appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Brandon. You know, next time we'll talk more about the menu.
All right, man. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.